Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Lynn S., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Today is Friday, May the 29th, 2026, and we're continuing our study of the Big Book in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 41, down at the bottom, as soon as I regained my ability to think, and we're reading right through until it was a crushing blow. This morning, the 12 steps, we have Mary F., 12 Traditions, Tenzin P., and readers of the text, Colleen M., Tamara C., and Jane F. The reference numbers for yesterday, Thursday, May the 25th, the 7 a.m. meeting, 23499. That's 23499. And the 10 a.m. meeting, 23500. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And this morning, Mary F. is going to read the 12 steps for us. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Lynn. My name is Mary F. I am a recovering, grateful, compulsive overeater calling in from New Jersey this morning. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our love over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to give service.
Thank you, Mary F. And Tenzin P. is going to read the 12 traditions. Hi, Tenzin.
Yes, good morning, Lynn. Good morning, everyone. Tenzin P. checking in from New York. And here are our beautiful 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tenzin P. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 41, right down at the bottom, as soon as I regained my ability to think. And we're reading through that whole chapter, ending with, it was a crushing blow. And this morning, Colleen M. is going to read for us. Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you so much for your service and everyone else who's done service this morning. I'm Colleen M., grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Maryland. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time, I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remember what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They had said that though I did not raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen, and more. What I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. So Fred has hit his bottom. He has finally come to a place of willingness to accept that he might have this problem that these men have been telling him about, but he's not been really willing to accept because, you know, he was not out of ideas. You know, he thought, you know, he had managed other problems of his life with knowledge and self-determination and willpower, and he would do the same with this. And he's now, you know, waking up. You know, they, in the beginning, when I started coming to meetings, they said, come to believe, come to believe. So, you know, I first had to come to the meetings, then I had to, you know, get out of the fog of the food and then come to believe that what you all were telling me was true for me as well. I had to identify in, and that's what I see this, you know, is what is happening with Fred, which is great news, because now Fred is really willing to listen to what these two AA people are going to tell him about the solution to his problem. You know, once we admit, you know, we're powerless and we have this thing, we have this disease, then we need an answer to it, right? And our answer is going to be a spiritual connection with a power greater than ourselves and a program of action, which they're going to continue to talk about, you know, leveling our pride, you know, getting honest with ourselves, and then continuing to take this program to other people. And the other thing I wanted to bring out later in this, that talks about how, you know, Fred got off of he didn't go through the ringer like a lot of other, you know, alcoholics have had to. He wasn't as badly mangled. And, you know, this disease takes what it takes. And for me, I had to be pretty mangled before I was willing to surrender and give the food up, because I just couldn't imagine life without certain foods. And today, for those that are struggling, I just want to say that it's a life way up beyond my wildest dreams. No amount of food could give me the life that I have today. But, you know, putting that food down, which seems like the hardest thing we ever will do, will give you so much freedom. And, yeah, just continue to calm and listen and talk to other people and get a relationship with a power greater than yourself. Follow these steps and, you know, you can have a life beyond your wildest dreams. So I can't wait to hear what everyone else has to say. And thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Colleen M. The line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Wednesday or Thursday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once, as it does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Liz S. from Oregon.
Tony B.
Janet B.
Karen
K. Okay. Can you hang on?
Mary B.
So I
Mary
can get
B.
everybody down.
Jennifer C.
Yep, hang on, please, just a minute. I can't write as fast as we're talking. Okay, I got Liz S., Tony B., Janet B., Pete B., Jennifer C., and I missed somebody in between Pete and Jennifer.
Mary B.
Karen K. Karen K., please.
Okay, I got Mary B. and Karen K. Who else was there, please?
Monica T.
Okie dokie. I think I got everybody. I've got Liz S., Tony B., Janet B., Pete B., Mary B., Jennifer C., Karen K., and Monica T. Good morning, Liz S. Please go ahead. Liz, press star 1 to unmute, please.
Thank you very much for the reminder. Liz S. from Oregon, recovered compulsive eater. Good morning, everybody. I'm sorry that Fred had to go through this. I'm really glad that he did, because it teaches me once again that I cannot be reliant solely on my intellect for recovery. I don't know how many times I've heard this and how many times yet I need to hear it or will hear it, but I know that I do need to have that message repeatedly given to me. And I need to accept it. And it's darn hard to accept it for me. oh man, I gotta trust something I don't be able to see, hear, know, whatever. Higher power? What? Okay. Anyway, back to the reading. He had to suffer a deflation of his ego. He had to get humble. I have to get humble every day. This meeting helps me get humble. It helps me hear from people who are recovered and who do have the humility of being teachable, and listening for clues on how they found recovery and how that might apply to me. So I love this paragraph. I'm sorry that people have to go through this process because it's kind of painful. But, you know, pain goes away and it's good to go through it. It helps. It helps me learn. And I have survived all the pain. And you have survived all your pain. And I appreciate that. And thank you for being warriors against this disease. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz S. from Oregon. Now we have Tony B., followed by Janet B. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you for your service. My name is Tony B. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Scotland. Oh, yes, he sees it. Finally, he's there. You know, this is his step one experience. And, you know, he's going over the events and realizing that they were right. You know, he's remembering what they told him. They prophesied if he had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come. He would drink again. And that was my experience over and over and over again with the food. Awakening as the result of the steps, which is what treats this mental obsession. And this is what he's realizing, that he's got, he does have an alcoholic mind. He does have an alcoholic mind. It's separate from the allergy of the body. He knew, you know, it's like, yes, no, absolutely, you guys are right. I can't put a single drink into my body. I know it. And he's a, you know, he's usually effective in other problems. He's a really intelligent man, and yet he cannot. He will always go back unless he has an answer to that twist of the mind. And the answer to the twist of the mind is doing what these guys say. He has to be with them. He has to be in the we of it. He can't be, you know, an outsider doing it his way. He's got to get into the fellowship. He's got to work the steps. He's got to pass the message on to other people. And then he will be immune to this twist of the mind. We get into a place where we're safe and protected. And we don't have those. We might occasionally have them, but we certainly know what to do. I know what to do when I do. The language he uses is clear, you know, that he's ready now. It didn't occur to him. He had a strange mental blank spot, and he knows. And he's on his way. It's great. I had that moment myself 3 years ago, and I haven't looked back. So, you know, and I've been 12 years before in the program, so don't give up, anyone who's struggling. The penny will drop, it will slot into place, and you'll be off and running. So with that, I'll share the time. Thanks very much, Lynn.
Thank you, Tony B. from Scotland. Next up, we have Janet B., followed by Pete B. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, my friend. Good morning, everyone. This is Janet B., recovered compulsive eater in North Carolina. Whenever I read this, I think of, like, poor Fred. He's, like, in a hotel room, and he goes and he gets drunk. And then that makes me think of Bill Wilson in the chapter Vision for You, page 154. Like, he's in a hotel room, bitterly discouraged, discredited, physically weak, almost broke, newly sober, but he doesn't get drunk, right? He's able to, by the end of that page, he thinks it through and he says, my sanity returned and I thanked God. And then he took action and made the call that led him to Dr. Bob, and the rest is history. Come, what is the difference between those two guys? Like, was God up there flipping a coin? Heads, Fred's going to drink. Tails, I'm going to give Bill Wilson a thought that'll help him. No, of course not. Bill had already surrendered to God. He had started cleaning up his path. He had done this work. You know, it talks about Fred. All he had was self-knowledge. Well, you know what? I mean, all cancer patients have knowledge that they have cancer. It doesn't make their cancer cells stop multiplying. And what did Fred have? He had an alcoholic mind. That is really scary when I think about it. Like, a mind that says, I can have one and I'll be able to stop. Like, imagine having that with respect to, like, crossing a highway. I'll be able to cross a highway in the middle of traffic and I'll be okay, right? The jaywalker they talk about, thinking, I can cross the street in traffic and I will not get hit by a car. Even though we get hit by a car and then hit by a truck over and over, and we know it, and we go to the hospital to get our broken bone set from getting hit by a fire truck. And then the day we get out, what do? I can cross the highway against the light and get away with it. And we get hit again until, of course, we're roadkill. But what is the solution of an alcoholic mind, of a compulsive eater mind, where I can't tell myself enough that, one, I'll be able to stop? What's my solution? How come Bill Wilson was able to not pick up a drink in the hotel? And this book gives us only one solution, and that is a miracle. It would take a miracle to convince someone that they can cross the street against traffic and now realize they can't. It took a miracle to convince me, not convince me, but to change me, so that it wasn't like I had to be resisting food. The miracle was I didn't care about eating food not on my food plan anymore. I certainly couldn't do that to myself. I stole food. I stole money for food back in the illness. But God comes in and through these 12 steps shows us how to have a miracle. 12 ends with a promise. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And a spiritual awakening, spiritual experience described on page 25, enters our hearts and lives in a way which is miraculous.
Time, please.
And does for us what we can't do for ourselves. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Janet B. from North Carolina. Next up is Pete B., followed by Mary B. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Lynn. Thanks so much for taking the meeting. You're doing a great job. My name is Pete B. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy in Pennsylvania. You know, it's always fun to, you know, talk about Fred and Jim, about what they were thinking or not thinking, or what they did or what they didn't do relative to what we do, or, you know, now, you know, in the current day, right? But, you know, to make the assessments and the, you know, like I like to think I'm like some kind of rehab psychologist where I can evaluate their thinking, and I know exactly what they were going through. And that's all just lies I tell myself, right? Because I don't know about you, but I'm delusional. I'm prone to delusional thinking, and that's part of the nature of the condition that I have. Maybe you don't. I don't know. But, you know, what we have to understand is, you know, with both Fred and Jim and the jaywalker, nothing that we know today existed. There was no we to speak of. There was a handful of drunks in Akron, a handful of drunks in New York. The book didn't exist. The fellowship didn't exist. There was no such thing as sponsorship. There was no such thing as steps. There was nothing for him to work. Right? So you can't make these assessments based upon what was here, what we know today, because none of it existed when these stories happened. Even when they were written, when these stories were written, all of these stories preceded how it works. And how it works is when the steps came about, right? So, you know, it's very interesting to hear how people talk about these non-negotiables that they have to follow from these bosses that they enlist to walk them through this, you know, 12-step program that if they don't get right, you know, by some reason they're going to, you know, pick up a drink or whatever, right? Like there was no non-negotiables here. See, the crushing blow, see, unfortunately, the crushing blow for me, it came from Entenmann's cakes and Ben & Jerry's ice cream. It didn't come from the eloquent shares I heard on A Vision for You or some other face-to-face meeting I went to. It didn't come from the guidance and meticulous actions and things that they told me to do, my sponsor told me to do, and ask people these questions. It didn't come, the crushing blow comes from the food. Unless I was driven down into I wasn't, circumstance, not virtue, drove me into the loving arms of God. Right? This is a deadly, fatal, incurable disease. And the message, if you're lucky, it comes from another person. But for most of us, for me, it came from the food. And that drove me into doing the things that I had to do in order to get recovered, which was to have, I'm going to shut up with this, was to have a dramatic psychic change, not a psychological change, a psychic change. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Pete B. from Pennsylvania. Mary B., good morning. It's your turn, followed by Jennifer C. Hi, Mary.
Hi there, my name is Mary B., recovered compulsive eater in the UK. I'm grateful to have connected with this reading this morning, today, and I'm thinking about the sudden thought. That's what comes through to me in this reading. You know, there is no consideration here other than on reflection, a sudden thought. And that is the twist of the mind that I have as a compulsive eater and also as an alcoholic. I have a mental blank spot, as it says later, and I don't think about the consequences. And there can be no fight because I don't have that in me. It's like a missing link, as it were, and you know, I've heard it referred to by others as the broken bridge, and that whole connector is gone for me. I have no sort of thermostat, and so the sudden thought will kick in. And what I have learned is that is as important for me to remember that I have that twist of the mind as it is to know about what I consider to be my alcoholic foods and any other behaviors. The first thought of itself and not engaging with that is abstinence for me as well. You know, that first thought and having a solution to deal with that is part of my abstinence. I cannot indulge those first thoughts. I can't even let them linger for one moment. I have to immediately turn them. And that is part of the step three for me as well, you know, eliminating a choice of pontificating or considering or indulging any idea that I can beat the game. It can't be done. I've tried. It doesn't work. It's a bit like me standing in the middle of the road again and thinking, yeah, like the jaywalker analogy, you know, I'll run across, I'll nip across the road and I won't get hit. I cannot even entertain that thought at all. And the only way I've learned to not entertain those thoughts is by that step three and then going through the rest of the steps to clear away whatever it is that's blocking me and to show me where my thinking needs to change so that I can move towards that power that is not my self-will, self-knowledge, or even the synthetic knowledge that it talks about in the doctor's opinion. It's got to be more than that. And then the more that I practice it, it becomes automatic, you know. And with step 10, I do get that neutrality, you know, those promises of of taking inventory and continuing to keep clear the access to that power that's going to help me understand and see that ultimately that's what I'm looking for, that power, that connection that I didn't find in food and compulsive behaviours. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to share on that, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Mary B. from the UK. Next up is Jennifer C., followed by Karen K. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Lynn. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Jennifer C., recovered compulsive overeater, powerless over food. You know, this whole chapter is all about trying to get me to check one box. And the box I'm trying to check here that they're trying to reinforce over and over again is, are you or are you not an alcoholic? Yes or no? We learned that we had to fully concede, all in, can't deny it, that I am a real alcoholic. That's the first step of this process. If I don't fully concede to that, I haven't taken the first step. So clearly the first step cannot be, my binge was so bad last night, I almost killed myself with a jar of peanut butter. I am all done. Like, clearly that can't be it, because this book is teaching me that step one is, guess what, sweetheart, you're not done. It doesn't matter if you think you were going to die last night. It doesn't matter that you hate yourself because you're gaining 2 pounds every day. It doesn't matter what your doctor said. It doesn't matter that you want to commit suicide. It doesn't matter. You're going to eat again. There's going to come a moment when you have no defense. No defense. And the beautiful thing about this chapter is it starts with saying, hey, guess what? Step one, you have to fully concede to having this alcoholic mind. Well, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm a compulsive overeater. Having an alcoholic mind, right? And then the chapter ends with, by the way, let me just tell you one more time, that at certain times, which means at other times, you're going to have this defense. You're going to have this willpower. You're going to have this reminder of what your doctor said. You're going to have this motivation to lose a couple more pounds. You're going to have the ability to recall, right? At certain times, you're going to have it, and then it's going to trick you, and it's going to make you think that you have more power than you actually do, because guess what? At other times, you're going to have no defense. You're going to carelessly do the very thing that is killing you, and you're not even going to think twice about it if you have an alcoholic mind. So step one is not that you're done. Step one is that you have an incomprehensible, demoralizing condition that you are guaranteed to do it again and again and again and again. Can I check that box? Do I have that mind? Yes or no? And that's what this whole chapter is trying to reinforce, so that I get a shot at getting recovered and knowing God as my only defense. And thank you all for being here with me this morning. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Jennifer C. Karen K., good morning, followed by Monica T. Hey, Karen.
Good morning. I'm Karen K., a compulsive eater from Syracuse, New York, and my credits don't transfer. I think I've said this before. This chapter for me is, what about relapse? And I never, ever, ever thought when I first came into vision that I would ever have to or choose to this cunning, baffling, and powerful disease to pick out that damn diet soda. It just was a gateway open to so many things. I just know for me, being out of that routine that God gave me, keyword, God gave me, 12 steps, a routine. And it's hard to get back on that routine. For me, it's like the prayer meditation, which obviously comes first. Getting my meals on time. My job is on the road to make sure everything is ready no matter what. I have something in my car. The bottom line, this disease is a freaking liar that wants to tell me, hey, come my way. Stop at the Circle K. You can just have one more. And God has got such a sense of humor more than once during that period of my life, which wasn't too long ago. I would go to that Circle K and they'd be out of Diet Mountain Dew. No shit. You know, like God has got my back. And I, of course, I would keep going back. And one day it was out 3 days in a row. So, you know, I didn't heed the message from my God. But the bottom line, I was beaten down worse than ever before. It wasn't, you know, it just was crazy. It was crazy. And I'm just so grateful that today I can be here just for today, this hour, this minute, and to be able to, on my way to be recovered again, but I'm not rushing it. Whatever the speed my sponsor goes, I go. I ran out of ideas. I'll do it quickly, do it quickly, do it quickly to get the effect and get that spiritual experience. Oh my God, my cat just looked at me, the poor thing. But anyways, I'm just grateful to be here and I'm grateful for all of you. And I wish everybody a wonderful weekend. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen Kay from New York. Monica Key, good morning.
This is Monica T. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Florida, now in Vermont. So here we are in a chapter, more about alcoholism, and my subtitle, more about my mental obsession, more about my abnormal way of thinking. I can't think straight when it comes to my disease, when it comes to food and whatnot. So here we are. Studying Fred and all of our stories in here, each one of these people have been sober. They've been sober for a while, and they've picked up. Why is that? Well, I got this crazy mind that tells me lies. So Fred here, he gets drunk, and then he goes, as soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening. Not only had I been off guard. You know, remember he was saying he was going to keep on guard? I made no fight. You know, remember, I'm going to fight this against the first drink. Remember, I'm going to remember to call my sponsor. I'm going to remember to do this. I'm going to remember to do that. I had not thought of any of that stuff. And I don't. Because this mental obsession, this abnormal ability to think, tells me I'm okay. It's going to be okay. I can have just one. And then, you know, he remembers, he's going over this stuff and he's remembering. My alcoholic friends had told me how that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would pick up again. And it might be for some silly reason or that I might not have any reason at all. Here he is. It's been a great time. His business went off great. He's happy. You know, yeehaw. The alcoholic mind. And I can remember finally one day, it came to me. I have an alcoholic mind. What does that mean to me? That means I have no memory of the consequences. And I also have no memory of the resolutions that I've made. That, you know, the next time, this is what I'm going to do. Well, this powerful thought that comes in, this obsession, it's going to override any other little thought I may have. And I'm going to do it because I'm totally powerless over this thinking. And he goes, oh my God, from that moment I knew it, I had an alcoholic mind. You know, it was a crushing blow. And the story is going to continue and it has a good ending, thank goodness. But you know that I have to have a spiritual, a higher power. And what he did for me is that he has removed this thinking. He has removed the obsession. It's not there. Because I'm not going to remember to call my sponsor or do anything. I may not want to either. You know, that
time, please.
And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Monica T. from Florida. For those of us who might have come on the meeting a little bit later, just to let you know where we are, We are continuing our study in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 41, the very last paragraph, as soon as I regain my ability to think. The line is now open for sharing on what we just read. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Wednesday or Thursday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Tara G.
Was that Tara?
Sarah.
Sarah, thank you.
Lisa.
Tenzin P.
There was Lisa.
Morrissey.
Maura ZZ.
And Tenzin P in New York.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, let's go with that lineup. We've got Sarah C, there was a Lisa, Maura Z, and Tenzin P. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. Thank you, everyone, for being here, for your beautiful shares. I'm so, so grateful. The big book says so much, and something that I just experienced yesterday is that even when I feel good, it's like it's so hard for me to even sit in it and
Sarah,
no.
Can I just ask, are you on speaker? There's a bit of feedback
no.
or something. Okay, thank you.
No, I'm sorry. I'll try my best. I hope it can be clearer. And I don't have to keep it too long. Even when I have good feelings and it's hard for me to hold, instead of picking up the food, it's saying that I need to continue to connect to God instead of pushing myself away from God. And with that, I pass.
Oh, thank you, Sarah C. Next up, we have Lisa, followed by Maura Z. Hi, Lisa. Can you let us know your last initial and where you're calling from, please?
Hi, good morning. This is Lisa C. I'm from New Jersey, and I'm recovered for today. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for a wonderful meeting, all the shares, and your service, everyone. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing new to add here, but just to kind of chime in anyway. You know, I think that the part that I'm kind of thinking about the most today is the last couple of sentences. And of course, like seeing how, yeah, I mean, we're seeing a step one thing here, although like it was pointed out that it wasn't written to illustrate step one necessarily. You know, to say, hey, this is what step one is, and now you're taking it. And I get that, and I actually appreciate that perspective because it helps me then to wear recovery like a loose-fitting garment and not like a noose around my neck. but I still am looking at this and thinking about the humility that has to come in that last sentence. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated, right? So Fred has never really suffered to the point that alcoholism has made him suffer in any other area where a problem really had him stumped and he needed to ask for help and he was completely defeated by the problem. And I think that that is really great to see because that's where the humility comes in, and humility is saving my life. Humility is saving my life every day because as long as I can stay there and understand that, like, I knew then, I know today who I am, what the problem is, and what I need in order to heal and to stay connected and to be able to recover, then I have a chance. I have a chance just for today. And that crushing blow, I will say one thing about the crushing blow, too, is, like, it's so uncomfortable to sit in that step one experience at times. For me, step one could be uncomfortable. It could also involve grief, like legitimate grief over like, oh my God, this is how I solved my problems my whole life. And now I have discovered that like, I cannot do it anymore. I will die. And so I'm confronted with that choice. And just to kind of, you know, recognize and validate that that's maybe part of step one. For me, it was that grief over kind of putting that way of life to bed for once and for all, laying it to rest so that I can invite something new. And, you know, if you're new, you're struggling, you're in step one, and, you know, I've been there now so many times, what feels like so many times, and certainly in and out of the disease, and like, there really is a way out. But that piece of, you know, finally understanding that we're defeated, I pray that everyone who needs to have that experience can have it today, because you're right on the other side of recovery. All right. With that, I will pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa C. from New Jersey. Next up, we have Maura ZZ, followed by Tenzin P. Hi, Maura.
Hi, Lynn S. Thank you so much for your service. Maura ZZ here in Virginia, gratefully recovered. Oh, my gosh. Poor Fred. Boy, has he gone through the ringer. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. Relapse sucks. And while I was in relapse, there was absolutely no thought of the consequences, because all I cared about was getting my fix, feeling that sense of ease and comfort from that first bite. But then, you know what? It doesn't last. The ease and comfort subsides very quickly. And all I can do then, all my mind is focused on, is more. I break out in more. That's what my allergy manifests in. I break out in more. I break out in a craving. I cannot do or think about anything other than filling that void. Unfortunately, the void I'm trying to fill is not that made of lack of food, but it's that made of a lack of connection to my higher power. That's the void I'm trying to fill. But until I can understand, you know, that willpower that I think I have, that willpower and self-knowledge are going to help me. They're useless. They're absolutely useless. They have no power whatever to help me put down the food. The power has to come from a power greater than myself. To find out that I have no power, it was a crushing blow. It was finally coming to the realization that of myself, I can do nothing to stop the insidious craving. I can do nothing to stop the desire to pick up again and again and again. I must have connection to power greater than myself. And that's what he is going to come to learn soon. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you, Maura ZZ from Virginia. Tenzin P. Hi, Tenzin.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you to everyone who has shared today. What an amazing paragraph. And I actually want to express my gratitude for this paragraph and for having, you know, having had this experience. I mean, there's suffering in life as human beings. There will be suffering, but the gift that we have in this program that is offered to us is to be able to do something with the suffering of addiction that will change my life forever, that changes my life forever. I become teachable. And as, you know, in various ways, as he points out in this paragraph, kind of on the side, this affects everything in my life from here on. It doesn't only affect, you know, how I will be in relation to food or any other addiction. It becoming teachable humility, as other people have talked about, that this is not a noose. This is the beginning of being able to live to my potential and to own, you know, what's my condition in my life. It's such a wonderful thing, actually. You know, these days there are situations where I am able to say, you know, I'm a recovering addict, so blah, 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 whatever the situation. But it is a really important part of my basic experience. And this is it's a funny thing, because while we are saying that self-knowledge avails us nothing, the analysis of this paragraph and how this, we are invited to use our minds, but this is using our minds and a deep level of connecting with our experience and our hearts. This is where it begins to come together. So I think that's all I have. I would just remember sometimes, as I'm listening to everybody share, that sometimes my very first sponsor in this program used to laugh at some things I would say. And I didn't take offense, but I was confused. And it would turn out that she could see that something that was causing me so much pain, she could see from the point of view of recovery, how this was another place that a door was going to open for me. And I'm just so grateful. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Tenzin P. from New York. We have time for one or two more shares. Would anybody like that time?
Elizabeth D.
Okay, Elizabeth D. Anybody else? We'll try and get you in.
Hi, Sarah N.
Okay, let's see how we do. Elizabeth P., please go ahead. Elizabeth D., please go ahead.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, got you now. Thank you.
Thanks. My name's Elizabeth D. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Massachusetts. Thank you for your service. The shares this morning have been so powerful and helpful to me too. And the thing that sticks out for me, most of all, first, I love the way someone referred to this whole chapter as more about relapse, because this really does, this is kind of the instruction manual for me on how to get out and stay out of relapse, because it gets right to the point of that strange mental blank spot. And what struck me for the first time in my experience of many years of reading this is it says, I had an alcoholic mom. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. Being in a strange mental blank spot, it is a state for me when I am in the strange mental blank spot. And it takes me some, I can be recovered. And then if my spiritual tools begin to slip over time, I can start to slowly enter into the strange mental blank spot. And that is when my disease starts to talk to me and it starts to tell me that I'm different from all of you, that that I can have that cup of coffee. And for me, specifics help. Some people can drink it. I cannot. It's a gateway. Diet soda, gateway. But I can, if I'm in that strange mental blank spot where I'm just separated from my higher power, and then my disease, which is in my thinking and in my mind, which is broken, speaks to me in my own voice because it's in my head and it tells me I'm different. And because I'm in that blank spot, which is, you know, blank, it's like a bad neighborhood and there's nobody there to help me, because I'm not listening to anyone and I'm not going to meetings and I'm not doing my spiritual tools, I am susceptible to it. And that's what really stood out for me today. And yeah, it's a crushing blow and it hurts, but I got to tell you, the other side of it is a life that I had never imagined that I could have. Working this program entirely and working the steps has been the key to what has been an incredibly fulfilling life for me. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Elizabeth D. from Massachusetts. And Sarah N., you've got a hot minute. Would you like it?
Thank you so much. Thank you all for being here.
just wanted to claim my seat. I feel like I'm beginning to slip in my mind. I heard about like using more spiritual tools. I know I have an alcoholic mind, and I'm glad that I showed up here today to listen to all of you. And I just pray to God, because I know this gives me peace to follow the steps and to be abstinent. This gives me a lot of freedom. So I'm grateful to all of you. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Sarah N. Thank you to everyone shared. And thank you to our fantastic team Friday, Mary F., Tenzin P., Colleen M., Tamara C., Jane S., Devorah S., and Robin L. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And the share ID for today, Friday, May the 29th, the 7 a.m. meeting, is 23502. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And this morning, Tamara C. is going to read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Hey, Tamara.
Hey, Lynn. Thank you for your service. This is Tamara C., grateful to be a recovered compulsive overeater in Missouri. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. You cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right. Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.